Maria. Welcome again to another edition of Warrior Connection. Information, education, world-class information, education with world-class leaders and scientists is what we provide. The idea is to provide every veteran and everybody with the information they need to protect their health and their safety. Tonight, it's incredible. Ladies and gentlemen, I think everybody has heard of the Nobel Prize. The Nobel Prize is awarded from a committee at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden. Tonight, we have one of the world's leaders on RF energy, microwave energy, and everything from the Karolinska Institute to discuss the health and environmental effects of microwaves and all the stuff that's happening in our environment. Professor Johansson, welcome, sir, to Warrior Connection.
Well, thank you so much. That was a grand introduction, I must say. I'm deeply honored.
Well, you know, I had the distinct pleasure for my 55th birthday to go over there at Karolinska Institute and present on depleted uranium and Agent Orange, and it was an experience I can't even begin to describe. Sir, you've been doing a lot of work on RF energy, microwaves, and everything for quite a while. Because
yes,
as culture has changed, everybody wanted all these conveniences, and they wanted their cell phones, and they wanted their computers, and they want all this stuff around them. They put all the convenience in their houses. We look around us, we got cell phone towers, we got radio transmission towers, every place under the sun. What has happened to society to allow this, but more important, are there health hazards from this, sir?
Oh, that's a very important question you immediately bring up. And I have to be honest and say, yes, there is a tremendous number of scientific papers clearly showing effects all from the molecular and cellular level through the tissue and organ level, including all forms of animals, bacteria, plants. And many of these effects on the immune system, on the brain, learning, behavior, the blood cell, heart rate, etc., are quite, from a human point of view, quite scary. And the number of papers is quite overwhelming. But then when it comes to action, I have to say, unfortunately, at least in Sweden, that the parliament and the government and the health authorities just turn a blind eye on all of this.
Well, the same thing happens here in the United States, because when you look around, everybody's coming up, where can we put up another cell phone tower or radio transmission tower? How do I put in this wireless computer stuff all around me? How do I hook up and get a cell phone that somehow I'm going to live with every day of the life? I mean, I've been was an emergency services sir for a long time, and I carried a pagers on my life, but then everything changed now. And everybody seems to have their head plugged into a cell phone, put right up against their brain, right against their ear, right next to their eyes. There's something really wrong here. Is this a lack of understanding of the biology, physiology, anatomy, or is it just economics overriding common sense?
Well, fortunately, I would say it's more of the latter. And if you come to Sweden today, you would see that people behave like some kind of robots or zombies, and as you say, they're kind of glued to or live inside of their cellular phones and their tablets 24/7, and they carry them with them everywhere, even into the shower and wherever they are, whatever they do. They are constantly hooked onto the internet and all the forms of information pages. And as you say, of course, for the general consumer, I would say it's not up to them to really have the knowledge, and they shouldn't have to read all the scientific papers, etc. But of course, the health authorities, the parliaments, and the governments around the world, they are informed and have been informed all through this journey by responsible scientists all over the world, and still they don't seem to react at all, or if they react, they do it in a very odd way, I would say. At the same time, you shouldn't forget, and you Americans have this fantastic expression, follow the money. And I have followed the money and discovered that some of the important, really important players in your life and as well as in my life, they have abandoned the ship long ago. And I'm talking about, for instance, the radiation protection authorities, I'm talking about the World Health Organization, the operators of the telecom systems, the manufacturers, and above all the world's insurance companies. They don't even touch this with a pair of pliers. They have left altogether, and they don't do it in sort of secrecy. They have been completely open about it. And I remember at the conference 2004 in London, in England, I met representatives of the manufacturers, the operators, and the insurance companies. And for them, it wasn't a question at all if there was any health hazards. The question was only who is going to pay for it in the future. And they all together said that they wouldn't pay a dime for it.
That's frightening. Well, let's go to the fundamentals.
Because
we have
it's also very clear
here.
Message
we have ionizing
to the
radiation.
Consumer, you know.
That's where we strip away the electron, the proton, the neutron, all the subatomic particles. And this causes a change in energy levels, and this causes severe physical damage immediately from almost any level of ionizing radiation, whether it be alpha, beta, gamma, X-rays, or any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The other type we're talking about today with RF is non-ionizing radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we have the RF signal being modulated, so sent out in the environment. And in contrast to where we have cellular damage from cellular destruction, where we're stripping away the protons and neutrons and everything, if I understand it correctly, I mean, this is just one aspect of the whole medical problem, but what is happening, the microwave radiation, the RF energy, is just like cooking a hot dog or cooking something or water in a microwave. You're causing thermal heating because the water molecule is vibrating at a high speed. And you're literally destroying the cell through heating and vibration. Is that kind of basically what's happening, sir?
Well, that's one side of it, but the exposure levels we are talking about are supposed to be non-thermal. But as you know, when people have started to look into the mechanistic characteristics of this exposure situation, it turns out to be much more complicated, and there could be much more subtle but still very important changes at the molecular and cellular level, for instance, affecting the calcium flux through the membranes. And that could be equally bad as destroying them by heating. You get very destructive powers, and at the end, you also see damage to, for instance, molecules like the DNA molecule. And sometimes I feel that this kind of arbitrary line that has been drawn in a textbook between ionizing and non-ionizing radiation maybe have to be shifted, because sometimes it looks from the preliminary data of scientists that even the non-ionizing radiation, like microwaves, certainly could affect ion situation at the molecular level. And maybe we need to reinvestigate these artificial borderlines between ionizing and non-ionizing.
It seems to me that there's really no safe level from my experience. I mean, when we go back to the Vietnam War and the first work I did with avionics, we had incredible radar sets.
Mm-hmm.
And here are these microwaves being transmitted out. And
mm-hmm.
we knew that even get anywhere near the beam of these radar transmissions was incredibly dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And there were specific isolation areas.
Yeah.
So when I look today and try to go on back and find out, well, when you look at the engineering and the science, what level do the engineers say is a hazard in an exclusion zone?
Mm-hmm.
And it was at 0.2 of a milliwatt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is incredibly very low energy where they, as you said, fully acknowledge danger and hazard. And that's way below, you know, what the exclusionary zone is. So you've got a level of gray higher. They say, you know, you can't go into this area and you'll fence it off. Well, you see that on radio or TV towers or microwave towers. But yet
but
you're going to stick this phone up against your ear, up against your brain and against your body and all over, or sit in that field where it's all gumming all over, way exceeding those levels.
But, you know, you brought up earlier also the very fascinating concept of, for instance, radioactivity, X-rays, and strong ultraviolet light. And if you would have called me like 50 or 100 years ago, then I would have said, oh, yes, it's all right to X-ray each other at the party or to carry around radium, plutonium, uranium. That's no problem whatsoever. And the thing was at that time, of course, that the knowledge was lacking. And then I sometimes sit down and ponder, you know, if you would call me again in a 50 or 100 years' time, would there be like death skull marking also on the safe gadgets that we use today, like mobile phones, and safe within quotation marks then, of course, like mobile phones, tablets, and so on. And I think while the knowledge is growing, it needs to also be used by the health authorities, the radiation protection boards, the parliaments, and the governments. And it's odd to be aboard this consumer's ship, realizing, as I said before, that all the other players, apart from governments and parliaments and health authorities, have all abandoned ship due to the risk of liability issues in the future, in the very near future, I would say.
It seems like, you know, back in the 60s, we had this thing called better living through chemistry. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, we're better living through microwaves and energy and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in one sense, and everybody understands this, I mean, all of us today, pretty much everybody has a microwave oven in their home.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows us to cook foods rapidly as long as they're wet and they have moisture in them.
Mm-hmm.
But then the common sense got to go, wait, if I'm going to use this to cook my food, I'm going to allow this up into my open environment. I can't help but wonder, why isn't there a connection made between the health hazards due to the fact that you're using it to cook food and heat it up and, you know, change the food process into what's happening to your body and your eyes and your ears and your cells?
Oh, yeah, that's a very good point, I must say, you know. And, of course, from a power point of view, your microwave oven is a much stronger device. It would cook it much quicker. But it's very relevant to ask yourself, and I did that many, many years ago, what will happen when we expose ourselves and our children 24/7, wherever we are, wherever we live, wherever we go to school, and it's a whole body exposure. And it goes on, you know, for weeks and months and years. And at exposure levels compared to natural background, which is in the order of a quintillion times higher, stronger. I mean, it's colossal. It's astronomical exposure levels. And you said before that you were looking for a safe hygienic standard, and maybe only the natural background would be regarded as safe, especially when we talk about long-term effects. At so-called non-thermal exposure levels, yes, but the non-thermal level could be as effective. Just think about if you go out this evening and watch the sky, you will see stars because your eyes and your brain have a molecular cascade system magnifying single photons into an image. And you can see the stars, you can sing Twinkle Little Star, you know. And this is a completely acute and non-thermal effect. You cannot measure any heating effect from the star, but still you see it, and still you can write a poem about it. But according to the radiation protection boards and health authorities, the stars actually don't exist because they are non-thermal, you know.
You know, when we look at the schools today, and our local school here at Rantoul, Illinois, got excited. They put a learning center in.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking at basically 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. So we're looking at kids at basically 11, 12, 13 years old. They're still mm-hmm. physiological, incredible development.
Mm-hmm.
And their brain is developing. Their eyes are developing. There's everything. Everything is totally in the developmental stage.
Mm-hmm.
And now they got computers and entire environment within their world. The whole thing is just saturated
mm-hmm.
with microwave energy, RF energy, bouncing over every wall so that every computer that sit on the desk can use it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we wonder when we look at the test results, why are we seeing such horrific test results where the child can't add, subtract, multiply, divide, they can't read?
Mm-hmm. But you know,
is this the connection we're seeing here that we're ignoring?
Yeah. I mean, you're kind of opening up doors for everyone to look through, because this is so very important what you bring up. And as you probably know, there are already peer-review-based scientific publications using controlled double-blind exposure situations showing, for instance, that rats exposed to levels that you and I are supposed to withstand, they will then get a less good concentration capacity and a decrease in short-term memory. And then you might say, well, I don't care about rats. But the same has been shown then for boys in a linguistic test, where they did less well when they were exposed, without knowing it, exposed to microwave exposure from mobile phones. And in sort of pure English or American, that means that when you use all these gadgets, you are dumbing down the kids. And that you can see, for instance, here in Sweden, we have had this world-famous PISA test for pupils, showing clearly that the Swedish educational system completely has plummeted the last years. They are recovering slowly, but we are still at a very bad level compared to other countries. And in the sort of general competition all over the world, I thought that, for instance, Sweden and United States, we wanted to be at the top end of the scale, not sliding down to the bottom.
And it's all pretty frightening. Can the body adapt? I mean, one thing that we hear over and over again, and I think it's a fallacy, that you say, well, the body can adapt to heat, the body can adapt to cold, the body can adapt to a lack of oxygen. I mean, granted, you can have some, you know, molecular changes in the cells to transport oxygen and everything, but is really any adaptation, or are we just fooling ourselves and thinking that the body can adapt, but we're reestablishing at a new norm where physiological damage is accepted? Is that what's happening here?
I believe you are right, you know, and adaptation generally also will have to go over many generations. That's not something that happens from one day to the other. And it seems as if in this sort of play around the golden calf, when profit is made, then acceptance is lowered regarding health damage and health effects. And somewhere down the line, people will have to pay. And 2016, the very, very fantastic, amazing study from the American National Toxicology Program was published, showing clearly an increase in cancer risk, both in brain tumors as well as in heart tumors. The latter are called schwannomas. The risk increase wasn't that big. It was only 3%. But if you translate that to the number of consumers worldwide, we're looking ahead to maybe 150 million extra cancer cases in the years to come. And of course, from an economical point of view, society needs to take care of all these patients, their relatives, and that will cost.
Do you think, I mean, one thing we came up convinced in our team is that Alzheimer's is a function of this better living through chemistry, pesticides, and everything. But Alzheimer's, as we're seeing, and all this stuff genetically changes because we're looking at incubation periods where all this stuff was introduced, to where we're looking at the 10, 15, 20-year, 30-year period now from once this was introduced and people started using it. We're seeing all these horrific medical effects that we never saw before.
And in younger and younger ages.
Pardon?
Yeah, you see them in younger and younger ages, too. The Alzheimer's disease, which used to be the old man's or the old woman's disease, is nowadays seen in younger and younger age periods.
So this is a whole combination. I mean, we got all the toxic stuff in our foods. We got the toxic compounds released in our environment.
Yeah, and
now
the electromagnetic fields.
Beaming our butt all around. I mean, yeah. It'd be really neat to be Star Trek and like to be able to beam my, you know, beam me right over to you right now. It'd be wonderful. I can go to my grandparents' house. But
At the same time, I don't think actually one needs to be any sort of rocket scientist type person, because most of the pieces of this gigantic jigsaw puzzle is already published. It's already in the open, and you can read it. And when you read it, you realize that, hey, there could be associations here that puts the microwave-based society in a big question mark corner, and I think it is. And therefore, many scientists around the world, for many years actually, they have vocalized questions, fears, and pointed to that research is very rapidly needed to be done and studies needed to be replicated. The lack of money is, of course, holding the whole area back constantly. But we need to do it, and we need to do it now. And especially since there are scientists like Odachi and Boss and their colleagues that have shown that rats that are exposed to mobile phones, they get damages to their brain cells in an area called the hippocampus, which is responsible for memories and mechanisms. And not only damages to these cells, but also cell death. So while you and I are talking, maybe such damage and cell death are inflicted upon children.
This is all scary. I mean, personally, on my own medical thing, I end up with radiation cataracts, and it was a combination because I had to set up the security perimeters for all RF transmissions during the war, and then we had all the ionizing radiations from DU and all the radioactive materials. So all this stuff was bombarding my eyes. I ended up with radiation cataracts. The other thing that showed up and they fixed was the neuromuscular problems in and around the eye. So this was a, you know, a puncture distribution of radioactive particulates in there. But at the same time, from what you're describing, the microwave and the RF energy that we're getting zapped with is also a contributing factor. So we're having all these unique eye problems today that we didn't see. What about on hearing and balance and nutrition and cardiac and respiratory functions?
I mean, there are papers from all these parts of your body clearly showing that there could be microwave or electromagnetic field-based effects. And again, there is not one or two papers. There are quite a number of them, and they are all pointing in the same direction. And as I said before, at least like the insurance companies and the manufacturers and the operators, they have realized what is going on, and they have abandoned ship completely. They don't take any form of responsibility for this. And for a consumer, that would be more telling than me showing some test tubes or micrographic images, because when these very, very big and important societal players have left ship, that's really telling, I would say.
Is there any way to protect oneself? I mean, I remember when we were doing research and everything, we put up what's called a Faraday cage. And is there any way to protect oneself from the external beaming continuously of all this microwave energy and all the cell phones and the radio transmissions and the computers and everything else?
Well,
is there any way to protect
oneself
from that, or is the environment just zapped too much now for protective capability?
Well, I mean, you need to live indoors in a Faraday cage, of course, and it would be a cage that would be adapted to various frequency types with different wavelengths, and that would be a very expensive form of house. And at the same time, you get into, I would say, an ethical and moral question here. Should we really have to protect ourselves against something that, from a basic human point of view or a life's point of view, is really a toy? We are not talking about life necessities like clean water, clean air, and food you can eat without risk. We are talking about very nice, very fun, and so on, but after all, toys, you know. And if we toss the coin around, I would say there is another side to it, instead of trying to protect ourselves from the current technology, I do hope someone is listening, maybe somewhere in California, like in a garage, starting to invent tomorrow's green, human-friendly technology, and not only human-friendly, but environmental-friendly, because as it is right now, plants, bacteria, and other animals are all at jeopardy from the human exposures. So we definitely need to come up with some other kind of solution. And it's interesting, you mentioned your experience from the U.S. Army situation. And I know, for instance, here in Sweden, and maybe it was the same in other countries, people initially reporting problems, like from radar, they were sent to a psychiatrist, because the radar equipment was safe. Someone had decided that. And then slowly people realized, no, the patient is actually right, you know. The beam is hazardous. And you can see the same development for a lot of other issues in our society that has gone from imagination to reality and even completely being stopped. And for instance, here in Sweden, since all the microwave-based wireless systems are sold to the general public under the headline that they are safe, I have written to the government and parliament and asked them for the documentation, because I rather would like to spend time on other equally important questions. If the radiation is safe, then please send me the documentation, clearly proving it to be safe and clearly giving you a green light to roll it out over the population of Sweden. And so far, I have in return not even received a single comma or a period. I have received nothing, which is for me also telling, but also stressing, I would say, because it seems that they take a big chance on us.
You know, I think, go back to what you said earlier, and I think this is just incredible revelation. All this stuff is just a toy. It doesn't really improve the quality of life. Yeah, it reduces the speed and the time to communicate, mm-hmm. but it's probably actually reducing the quality of communication.
Mm-hmm. True.
But we're having all this stuff up, and then the amount of money that's spent in this, I mean, everybody's got to have a cell phone all the way down to the young child instead of the parent knowing exactly where the child is at all times.
Mm-hmm.
They put a cell phone on them as if they can control them through a leash. The amount of money that's economically thrown into these toys is just staggering.
Mm-hmm. If just so, Doctor, a fraction of it was spent on children, for instance, then I would say that all children in schools would be close to William Shakespeare and Albert Einstein. And you should remember that these two guys, they didn't even have a ballpoint pen, less any form of electromagnetic-based communication tools. And as you know, Einstein and Shakespeare are unsurpassed in brilliance. And they did very well without all these gadgets. So the question is, are we actually fooling ourselves into some kind of a corner? And I very often meet parents here in Sweden who actively believe if they buy their kid a new tablet or a new mobile phone, the kid will automatically become a new Nobel laureate or a celebrity of some sort. And they don't, of course.
That's not going to happen. I mean, when we look at it, we put man supposedly on the moon with slide rules.
Yeah, I know.
I went all the way through my school, and calculators didn't exist, as you did, too. You're a renowned, world-renowned scientist, one of the greatest research institutes in history. And we didn't achieve this with a calculator, but today every kid's got a calculator. And yet when the power goes out or the sun doesn't shine, they can't communicate, they can't write, mm-hmm. they can't add, subtract, multiply, or divide. Are we going backwards instead of forwards because of the convenience of technology that has now proven to be a hazard?
Well, to me, it seems that we are moving backwards, actually, you know. And as I said before, when you move around in Stockholm nowadays, people are very unfriendly in the sense that they're all occupied with this small iPhone or iPad gadget instead of communicating directly. So to me, it seems that these gadgets actually disconnect people from each other. And when there have been general power failures It's so interesting. The first thing that happens is that people knock on each one's door, starts by saying, you know, my mobile phone went dead. And the other goes, oh, mine too. But come in, I will fix us something to eat or a cup of coffee or something like that. And they start to talk the old-fashioned way. And also there have been experiments done in Norway where they found out that children that learn how to write, they write much better and understand much better if they form the letters by hand instead of pressing keys. Keys where a K, an L, and an O will be the exact same movement, the exact same pressure, in contrast to making them by hand on a piece of paper. So there are, of course, huge question marks, all from pedagogic and behavioral point of view, all the way over to the serious health consequences like learning deficits, cancer, panoramas, neurological diseases, cell damage and cell death, even at the central nervous system level. And I don't want to take away anything from anyone, you know. I just want to know that when a government or parliament says that a system and or a gadget is safe, I want to know that it is safe, and then I want them to send the documentation. And when they don't, I feel scared. It's like being part of a Hollywood movie, I would say, you know.
Well, that's what I had to live with. You've seen the documentation, sir, when I was given the order to clean up the depleted uranium-friendly fire mess in Desert Storm. They knew the serious health hazards, and then they gave me a written order to lie in my reports to avoid all responsibility, which is happening to this day. One thing's a little story, sir, on the sideline was very interesting. After the completion of Desert Storm, when we were cleaning up all the medical mess, the Swedish Army sent a unit in there, the KKMC, up in northern Saudi Arabia to work with the U.S. military. Lo and behold, it was a Colonel Lind, L-I-N-D. Lo and behold, it was my cousin. and it was really strange because then they cooked us a good old Swedish breakfast and we're sitting there talking about doing things hands-on with tools that we had available, not sitting at a computer because we couldn't solve the computers because there was no calculator or computer there. We had to use the knowledge, the skills, and the attitudes that we had to solve the problems. What's next, sir? Where do we go next?
Well, that's a very good question, too. And I do hope, as I said before, that people around the world are inventing new human and environmental friendly solutions to these communication tools. And also I see from a kind of general behavioral point of view that there seems to be somewhat decreased usage of all these gadgets, especially among people in power and people with wealth. So it has become like a social divider, and I just recently saw a fantastically interesting interview with a very wealthy man here in Sweden, and they asked him what is the best part of being so very rich, and then he immediately said, well, I don't have to use a mobile phone all the time. So it's really a social divider from that point of view.
I don't understand.
No. It's really fascinating.
Well, you know, you're looking at the economic cost for using all these devices, and that's got to be a come player because all of a sudden, and we don't do it and I don't do it. I mean, you got a regular standard telephone. But when you start buying all these tools, the amount of money that you have to distribute for everything else is finite. I mean, you're not going to have a whole lot of extra money. If you're spending your money on all of these gadgets or toys, as you say, and yet we're not considering the physiological effect on the long term or just the reduction in communication and learning, it seems like we're going backwards.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree. And I also see in the general discussion here in Sweden that there are quite a number of persons more and more asking the type of questions that you are asking. Questions like, is it really medically safe for my kid? But is it also from a learning point of view the best tool? Or may it be better that we spend more time on adults called teachers and we get more of them, because there has been a reduction of the number of teachers in many schools, not only in Scandinavia, but in other countries too, and bigger groups of kids. And maybe we need to go in the other direction if we want to have new Einsteins and new Shakespeares.
We sure do need. I mean, one thing, we had it on a radio program last week, sir. I mean, we had a great musician here who was just awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature, and we talked about it on our radio show last week. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, got that all done, which was totally fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
How, when you look at education and you try to put everything on a computer or a tablet, and you get all this RF energy and microwaves bouncing all the way around,
mm-hmm.
what I've seen, or I suspect, is they have to dumb down the reading level and the writing level to the average of the person across the domain.
Mm-hmm. True.
And when we look at that, the average reading level of the math level, what we'll see across the United States, I know for sure, much less in other nations, may be what we call fourth or fifth grade level. In other mm-hmm. words, they're still in grade school.
Mm-hmm.
How does this all come into play today, because we have such a lack of science and engineering and medical knowledge? How does it come into play in people to understand what you're saying here? Do they have the anatomy and physiology, math and physics to understand it? Or are we talking someplace beyond a realm where they can't even conceive what we're discussing?
Well, you know, we have been so stressed here, actually, because we do not reach the general public, and nor do we reach people in power. So we have even formed what I would call a think tank to sit down and discuss strategy. How would we be able to reach across to people that are completely occupied with these gadgets all the time, believing they are safe, believing they are good for them, and we just want to point to some drawbacks and backsides and backlashes of the technology, and we just cannot reach them. And after several years of the ongoing discussions in this think tank, I have to say, and I blush and I'm ashamed, you know, that we have not been able to poke a hole in their armor. They are just only occupied all the time with their mobile phones and tablets and computers and laptops, and we don't get through to them. And I both feel stressed and often sad, I would say, because I have tried so very hard, and the message doesn't seem to get into their mind at all, with exceptions, of course, with exceptions, but on a general basis, not.
Doctor, I work with addictions in the military and such, and you talk about all this stuff, and you talk about social media and things that draw people in. There's gambling, pornography, all these things on these electronic devices, and it does have some good, but it's got a lot of bad, and people are addicted to it. And when you stand up, and when I read your article about how you were being hindered to get that information out, I thought of Doug the same way. He's been hindered. And I remember what George Orwell said. He said, the further a society drifts from truth, the more they hate those who speak it.
And
I think of you when I read that. But we have a lot of problems with the electronics today. And the problem, major problem, is people don't want to stop it. They love it. They keep asking for more and more. Mm-hmm. And you're like hollering fire. And they're like, shut up. You know, you're going to ruin the party.
Exactly. You know, that's what I feel all the time. I'm kind of a party pooper, entering the fun party in the big room. Everyone is so happy. Although they don't talk with each other, they at least communicate via Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, you know. So it's an indirect communication. And I'm trying just to get their attention for a few minutes, and I cannot. And I also, of course, very often feel a very strong opposition from various parts of the society, because inherited into these gadgets are, of course, an enormous profit and possibilities for employment and revenues for governments and parliaments, etc. And then the party pooper is not really welcome. And, of course, every evening, you know, I get down on my knees and I pray to God that I'm wrong, and that all scientists are wrong. And you mentioned addiction, and the number one scientist in the field in the world is, I was nearly going to say, of course, American, you know, and that's Professor Henry Lai at the University of Washington in Seattle, and he showed many years ago effects on the type of nerve cells and transmitted molecules that are inside of the term addiction. So again, you have the pieces of this jigsaw, and if I was the prime minister or the president or whatever of a country, I would feel extremely excited by the research, but also very afraid and scared. And I would say to my ministers that we really need to get down to the details of this and start immediately to fund the independent scientists, not the industry-dependent ones, but the independent academic scientists, to replicate and test all these pieces of facts and knowledge that has emanated from previous years of research. And to the best of my knowledge, very, very little is done. And as I said before, in the meantime, the big players have abandoned the ship and sailed away. And you and I as consumers, we are left together with unwilling governments and parliaments and very unwilling health authorities. So I don't know what to do, to be honest, you know.
I'm thinking of moving to Rantoul with Doug and building a wall around my house.
I'm out here on the farm. When we look at the school and look at the learning, a long time ago, and the trip up here, the first computer learning devices, computerized learning, took place at the University of Illinois. Mm-hmm. And they developed that, and then they had all these ideas and these dreams and hopes that with all these gizmos and everything else, these toys, as you say, sir, that all this stuff was going to improve. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, when we look at the test results, we're seeing the other thing happen. We're seeing the other direction go.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of sitting there and doing the stubby pencil math problem or reading the book, you know, and having the book in your fingertips,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you can go back to that book again because, you know, I've got so many computerized disks and everything from my research over many years at the university. It's on a disk and it's no longer ever accessible. Because the new devices came about, and now they can't access to the old thing.
Mm-hmm. I know.
So we're all of a sudden here building an obsolescence and lack of communication. At the same time, we're limiting individual ability to perform and do a job.
Mm-hmm. I know. I agree. I have a relative, you know, that is an expert in these computer hardware, and he points to that for many of the storage systems that the layman would be used in his office or in his home. Many of them have a survival time of less than 10 years, many even less than 5 years, and then suddenly you cannot use your special disk or tape or whatever system, hard disk drive, because you don't have the necessary hardware any longer to read it and access the information. Whereas a book, if you don't have a big fire, of course, but a book is on its shelf. And here at the Karolinska Institute, we have books that even were made by hand before Gutenberg in Germany invented the printing press. So they are like 600, 700, 800 years old, and you can still read them and you can still use them.
You know, one thing when that's important, because one thing that I learned in my research is somebody got a new book and they published a new book, and somebody was fool enough to throw away the old book, not realizing the new information wasn't in the new edition. And all of a sudden, this transmission of knowledge that has been lasting it forever and ever, ever on a piece of paper or parchment or papyrus or whatever we have, it's now disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say a whole lot for the future of mankind if they can't communicate and transmit information from the past to the future.
Mm-hmm. And also, you know, these electronic devices, many of them actually gives you information that is completely uncontrolled. Anyone could write and change the information content on various web pages. So you need to really be educated before you start learning, which is impossible, of course, you know. Which kid is born a professor?
Nobody is. That's the only thing I've learned. I'm living an upside-down funnel. The more education I get, the more I realize that I haven't got a clue what's going on.
No, right, yeah. Then you're a scientist, you know. My wife She constantly asks me every day, what kind of conclusion did you arrive at? She asks me when I get home, and I have to say, I don't know, you know, because very few times in a scientist's life you do get to some kind of final endpoint. The answers will yield new questions, and it's an ongoing process of documenting and producing knowledge. And so it's a fascinating world. And at the same time, it's sad to realize that the developments within science is not any longer used in society, and the information generated seems often superfluous. And that's new to me as a scientist, at least. Beforehand, people did listen, and now they cannot listen because they're occupied with their iPads and iPhones instead.
What is hope for the future and everything else? Where should we go? I mean, communication, all this stuff, writing, the great stuff, the great works of history, there was no computer. I mean, computers basically are only 10, 15, 20 years old.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
And these cell phone things are all of a sudden, it was the greatest marketing tool to everybody's got to have a cell phone. Mm. And I'm going, for what? Why do you need to be on the telephone when you're taking a bath? Or why do you need to be on the telephone when you're going to the grocery store?
Mm. Or driving a car.
Oh, boy, the accidents. Look at the accidents.
Yeah.
I don't know what
it's
like in Sweden here, but in central Illinois and all across the United States, the accident rates because the person's on the cell phone or what do you call this thing, Chris?
Texting.
Yeah.
They kind of use both thumbs to text, and they don't have their hands on the steering wheel, and next thing we know, they're crashed and burned and dead.
Yeah, there has been a lot of these accidents in Scandinavia, too, and also, you know, sort of funny situations where people are walking and trembling over fountains or whatever while texting, not hurting themselves but making at least a fool of themselves and wetting their telephone as well. So it's a different type of world, and hopefully people are happy, they are intelligent, they have a lot of information and facts in their head, and I am wrong. That's what I hope for every evening. But then when I wake up in the morning, I get to my office and I see my computer. It looked like a pregnant otter, I would say. You know, new papers have arrived overnight. And I realize I'm back to a pretty harsh reality. And now we have talked about various aspects of these electronic gadgets. And for me, of course, the most important one is if they have direct health effects. And as we said before, there is such a huge number of such publications, including very scary effects at bacterial level, plant level, animal level, including insects, fishes, etc. So there is a bunch of question marks that needs to be attacked. And on top of all of this, which we have not touched upon at all, is, of course, the question about the functional impairment, electro-hypersensitivity, people that, due to health problems, cannot even be close to these gadgets any longer. They get headaches, nausea, concentration problems, skin rashes, etc., and have to stay completely away from all these gadgets.
But how do you stay away from the gadget when it's totally saturated in our environment?
Oh, that's a very important issue you bring up and a very tough question. And for many people, it's a huge, huge problem. And like here in Sweden, they, not many of them, but like up to 1,000 persons have kind of left society, are living out in the woods in very isolated areas. And in caravans or trailers or whatever. And they are, of course, handicapped in a double sense. And I happen to know in United States you have in the order of 10 to 15 million persons with electro-hypersensitivity. So your new president, who wants to make America great again, maybe he needs also to make America healthy as well as intelligent again, I would say, you know. There are a lot of trains that needs to be reversed here.
That requires a lot of changes. I mean, you got to change your diet, go back to wholesome foods, preparing foods, rather than using all these prepared foods that you stick in the
indeed.
Microwave
yes.
and then you cook out and eat it.
Yeah.
What about the damage to the foods that you're cooking in a microwave or any of these tools? Are they changed molecularly or, I mean, at the fundamental level to where there's a possibility they could no longer be safe to consume?
Oh, that's a huge debate, you know, around the world, and there are different sides to it, and I have to admit I'm not an expert at all, but some people say that, no, the cooking is so quick, so it's actually pretty mild to the different ingredients, such as vitamins, etc., and others say, no, it will destroy, or actually not destroy, rather alter the composition and the buildup of molecules within the food and making them harmful to your body. They are sort of alien type variants of the different molecules. And as I say, I'm not an expert at all, but what I see here in Stockholm, we have some very posh restaurants with one or two or three stars in Gid Roche, and I see that they never use microwaves to prepare the food, and I think it's primarily because the texture of the food is changed into kind of a porridge character, and anything that you cook comes out in a very soft way, and so it very much depends on what you want to produce in your kitchen. At the same time, I'm the first to realize that for a stressed mother or father preparing some food for their baby, it's a very convenient and quick way to heat it. So again, I do hope that solutions and knowledge could find hand to hand and produce new gadgets for tomorrow that are genuinely safe. And when I then write to the Swedish government and parliament and ask for the documentation, I will get a little bit more than nothing back, you know.
You almost indicated there's a willingness to accept, reject safety and look at health and safety for convenience.
I think there is and has been for quite some time, you know. Yeah. And you know, I think there has been such a reaction, and very often you get an odd feeling that health parameters have slided somewhat down the list, and convenience and above all profit and greed seems to run very much of the show. And anyone loves money, of course, but at what cost?
But then again, at the same time, the lifespan of all these devices today has become short. They're almost a throwaway when they break. When we go back to earlier technology, you had a vacuum tube or servo mechanism, you had something broke, you replaced it or fixed it in the machine shop. And now you just throw the whole thing away. So now you've got the problem, if I got any information stored on it and it only lasts for 2 years and I throw all that information away, or all of a sudden, you know, I've got, what do they call them, e-books or whatever it is, they've got my books, I'm reading on the device, I can't no longer have access. Chris had a question here. What is the effect of reading and trying to read a book on the computer or focus on the computer with the EMF energy and all the other stuff? I mean, you know, we had shrink-off radiation, the old vacuum tube TV tube was extremely dangerous. Do we see anything similar here with the photons being emitted?
Yes, I mean the main result of this reading and watching close behaviors is myopia. Kids today, they don't have any long distance viewing capacity any longer, and they need glasses very quickly in their life, and they are very myopic. And here in Scandinavia, it's like an avalanche of myopia, you know.
This is frightening. How
but, you know, when I come to United States, you know, when I come to United States,
sir, I mean, this is absolutely mind-boggling. But how do we get the message out? When we put the message out, do people want to accept the message, or will they ignore the message for convenience and ignore the consequence on their health?
Well, to me, it seems the latter. And when I go around and give lectures, like here in Sweden or elsewhere in the world, the audiences could be big, of course, but like here in Sweden, if I would gather like 100 to 200 people, there is 10 million more. And if I go to the United States, there could be audiences of 300, 400, 500 people. And I think you have like 300 million people. So the rest, where are they?
Doctor, I hope Homeland Security is listening today so they can take care of our electric grids in America. Because if electric grids go down and they're very vulnerable to terrorism, we could really lose everything.
But the question is, of course, you know, what will you actually lose? And I think you touched upon previously a very important character of these new systems. People use them for like 1 or 2 or 3 years, and then they buy a new one, which is generally non-compatible, and it doesn't seem to bother them at all. They just toss it away and start from zero again, building up new images, pictures, photographs, music, etc., etc. And the long-lasting information doesn't seem to be so crucial. And I talked with a librarian some weeks ago, and I wanted to read a book by the Nobel laureate Hermann Hesse from Germany. And I said that if she could get the special book for me. And she said, no, I cannot. We have thrown it away because no one is borrowing it any longer.
Well, God bless you, sir. Thank you very much, Professor Johansson.
Thank you.
From the Nobel Prize, Center of Nobel Prize, Karolinska Institute, Stockholm, Sweden. Thank you, sir.
So
God bless you. Thank you for your work to protect the safety of all the nations and all the world.